Part 4, Practicing Wisdom, Examining How Beings and Things Exist. To generate the type of love and compassion that motivates you to seek Buddhahood, not for yourself, but for the sake of others, first, you must confront suffering by identifying its types. This is the first noble truth. From the time we are born to the time we die, we suffer mental and physical pain, the suffering of change, and the pervasive suffering of uncontrolled conditioning. The second and third noble truths lead us to understand the causes of suffering and whether or not those causes can be removed. The fundamental cause of suffering is ignorance, the mistaken apprehension that beings and objects inherently exist. Now, as I will show, beings and objects do not, in fact, exist this way. We all have a valid, proper sense of self, or I. But then, we additionally have a misconception of that I as inherently existing. Under the sway of this delusion, we view the self as existing under its own power, as established by way of its own nature, as able to set itself up. This sense of inherent existence can even be so strong that the self feels independent from mind and body. For instance, if you are weak from sickness, you might feel you could switch bodies with someone who is stronger. Similarly, when your mind is dull, you might feel you could switch your mind with someone else's sharp mind. However, if there were such a separate I, self-established and existing in its own right, it should become clearer and clearer under competent analysis as to whether it exists as either mind or body, or as the collection of mind and body, or as different from mind and body. In fact, the closer you look, the more it is not found. This turns out to be the case for everything, for all phenomena. The fact that you cannot find them under such analysis means that those phenomena do not exist under their own power. They are not self-established. Sometime during the early 60s, when I was reflecting on a passage by Tsongkhapa about unfindability and the fact that phenomena are dependent on conceptuality, it was as if lightning coursed within my chest. Here is the passage from Tsongkhapa's text. A coiled rope's speckled color and coiling are similar to those of a snake. And when the rope is perceived in a dim area, the thought arises, this is a snake. As for the rope, at that time when it is seen to be a snake, the collection and parts of the rope are not even in the slightest way a snake. Therefore, that snake is merely set up by conceptuality. In the same way, when the thought I arises in dependence upon mind and body, nothing within mind and body, neither the collection, which is a continuum of earlier and later moments, nor the collection of the parts at one time, nor the separate parts, nor the continuum of any of the separate parts, is in even the slightest way the I. Also, there is not even the slightest something that is a different entity from mind and body that is apprehendable as the I. Consequently, the I is merely set up by conceptuality in dependence upon mind and body. It is not established by way of its own entity. The impact of my reflection on this statement lasted for a while, and for the next few weeks, whenever I saw people, they seemed like a magician's illusions, in that they appeared to inherently exist, but I knew that they actually did not. That experience, which was like lightning in my heart, was most likely at a level below completely valid and incontrovertible realization. This is when my understanding of the cessation of the afflictive emotions as a true possibility became real. Nowadays, I always meditate on emptiness in the morning and bring that experience into the day's activities. Just thinking or saying I, as in, I will do this, will often trigger the feeling. But still, I cannot claim full understanding of emptiness.